Over the last few weeks, we've been dealing with the matters that deal with grace and faith. And the building upon this faith, we're looking at the basic of a solid foundation that is set forth within that faith is that, as we find in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, that faith is the assurance of things hoped for, conviction of things not seen. And then in verse 6, for those who will come to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that seek after Him. And so we find that without faith, it's impossible to be well-pleasing to God. So we need to understand what that faith is and how it applies in reference to our relationship with the Lord. There's been many sermons focused on this text of this particular prophet and the generation to whom it was written. And within any writing, the subject matter is of vital importance. And actually, that's what this is from beginning to end. It's a focus upon this matter of faith, of what individuals should be understand and what they should consider within their mind. A statement that was made, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. That was George Harrison, 1979, in reference to it. And so we see that principle that if you don't know where you're going about, you know, you just go about doing whatever it is you're doing. We find that within the writing of Matthew, in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 13, here's what we understand. This is the revelation of God. Out of all the things that God could have recorded or had the apostles recorded, these are the matters that He wants us to come to a full understanding of. When He said, "Enter ye in by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many are they that enter in thereby. For narrow is the gate, and straitened the way that leadeth unto life, and few are they that find it." And I don't know how many few are. I know that during the days of Noah, few was eight. But whatever the number is of what it's few, we need to make sure that that is our pursuit, that serving the Lord and being found acceptable to Him and taking the right path is not one that man generally will take when he follows after his nature, the things of this world, the things of this life. And that's what 1 Corinthians chapter 1 had identified. We find that there's two ways, one to destruction and one to life. First, the destruction, many are they that enter. Second, to life, few are they that find it. And the terminology that we consider there of this finding it, we understand that it's going to take an effort. And man gives an effort, no matter what his religious, quote, religious considerations are, whether that be humanism or whatever the case may be, they spend a lot of time looking for that of which they're following. And so this isn't a matter of what the Lord expects us to do something that we don't already do. The matter is that we need to make sure that the path that we choose, the path that we embrace, is one that will lead to life. We find that in Luke chapter 19 and verse 10, of where we're told that the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost. And so we have that matter setting forth. To save is to deliver or protect. And then we have this matter of lost is when you're destroyed fully. And so we're looking at a matter within what we're considering to be involved in that of establishing a broken relationship that God would have us to restore, and He has set forth that we might be reconciled to Him through that. But the question is, within life, when you talk about the matter that Jesus came to seek and to save that which is lost, well, what does that mean? We find that in reference to these two gates, we have this reference is made that if you don't know where you're going, two questions that you need to ask. Have you ever been riding along with somebody and you get this sense that doesn't know where they're going? You get this, there's some information that is being collected of where you might say, do you know where you're going? You know, or we're lost, aren't we? Because you have determined that from the basis of the information that you have achieved. And some knowledge has come to your attention causing you to question the knowledge of the driver. It may be signs that you see alongside the road or the direction in which they're traveling. They're going north, should be going south. Either way, your conclusion is based upon your ability to translate information as to whether it's right or wrong. So when we ask ourselves or the question, or understand that he came to seek and to save that which is lost, what does that mean? This matter of knowing the right from the wrong. What was he seeking to do? Because you have people that would say, well, I'm not lost. What do you mean, save me from being lost? I'm not lost. So what does this concept of being lost involve? In Romans chapter 1, verse 22 and 23, that here was a case of where the Lord identified through the Apostle Paul in regards to how individuals would gather their information and what they would come up with as a result of it. But he said in verse 22, professing, these are those that that had that little light God has put in all of us, this desire to serve God, and they snuffed it out. But he said, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. That's when you have this vainglory of life, that we profess ourselves to be wise, that our conclusions, our decisions, and all of that is above that of our Creator. And we've determined to be wise, and in that vein have become fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God for the likeness of any image or of corruptible man, and of birds, and four-footed beasts, and creeping things. That's what they did. They served the things of this world. And those idolatrous practices, they have Dagon was a fish, and you have Baal was a bull, and you have all of these matters, especially within that of Egypt. You see all of their gods of where they were represented by some creature in reference to it. But these individuals that so behaved themselves in that manner, it says that in verse 28, and even as they refused to have God in their knowledge, God gave them up unto a reprobate mind to do those things which are not fitting. So God gave them up because they chose in regards to their life not to serve the Lord, but to serve themselves or some lower creature. Mentioned this morning in class of this picture that it saw that deals with the religion, which it is, of global warming and the woke movement. That's how it is applied of what they do for their God. And within this assembly, kind of like what we have here, there were plants this high. They were all scattered out, and they were praying to these plants or requesting forgiveness for their repentance of how they treated them or whatever the case was. And we find that people are doing weird things in order to satisfy their humanism within their life. Well, we find in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 13 through 16, that there is the matter of this, as opposed to those that serve man, serve himself, rather than that of God, in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 13, of where after having identified in chapter 11 the many heroes of faith, if you will, from Abel to Enoch, Noah, dealt with Abraham and Moses, and dealing with all of these individuals that kept their faith in God, their assurance of things hoped for and a conviction of things not seen, believing that God is and that he's a rewarder of them that seek after him. These all died in faith, not having received the promise. Now, God gave the promise to Abraham, but it had not yet been fulfilled. What they were looking for, we have. And that when we think about that, we should be appreciative more so of what has been provided. But they all died in faith, not having received the promise, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, because they knew the character and the reliability of God, the immutability of God, that he does not lie. He will not change those aspects. This matter, he, in regard to it, that because of that, having confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth, for they that say such things make it manifest, you can see it within their life, that they are seeking after a country of their own. This world is not our country. We're here but for a short time, and then we will depart, and the body will return to the dust from whence it came, and the spirit will return to God who gave it, and they seeking after a country of their own, something beyond that, and if indeed they had been mindful of that country from which they were out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly. And so they put their focus upon that which is above, not that which is upon the earth. And as a result of that, God is not ashamed of them to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. And so those two gates, one of them that leads of those that refuse God, that will result in a separation, that it continued separation that was brought about by their transgressions, or that of to seek the heavenly. And we have that choice. So when it identifies that Jesus came, the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which is lost, we need to understand that it's the scriptures that identify and tell us and inform us that this relationship with God has been severed because of sin, and now God has provided a way by which we can be saved, or restored, if you will, to that relationship. Now, you're going to have choices in life, and all of these and others, but these are most mindful of what type of attitude is expressed within the lives of individuals. Taoism or Taoism, but Taoism, its pronunciation, is the right way. This is the right way. And it basically deals with how you deal with the world within which you live. And it's materialistic, even though they do recognize a supreme being. We understand that that is the right way, the Tao. That's the right way. You have Shintoism, the way of the gods. Now that deals with the Japanese in regard to it. Taoism is Chinese. Shintoism is that of Japanese. You have Hinduism, which is a way of life. Here's how you live. Now, you could be, in regard to it, they don't have books. They don't have a standard of right or wrong. And basically, the individual, which consider themselves to be wise, has the ability to direct their own life. So they don't really have a moral standard except for what they have within themselves. And so that's kind of a live and let live kind of situation. You have Buddhism, which is human life is one of suffering. You're going to suffer. And you can get past that if you will let yourself go from the trappings of the world. And Buddhism, it's on the principle that that you do good. And if you don't do good, at least don't do harm. Okay? You can be a good Buddhist if you do that. And so you have that life is one of suffering. And all of these have a reference to the matter of life, of this life, the humanistic part of the materialistic part of that of man. The Stoics, Stoicism or that, is unmoved by joy or grief. They're ill affected by either one. You know, either one. It's not going to affect their life. And these are the ones that the Apostle Paul dealt with that of the Epicureans, which is, rather than being unmoved by joy or grief, that you the pursuit of pleasure, whatever makes you happy. Now, these are simplistic as far as the definitions are concerned. They're not my definitions, however. They're simplistic in reference to the definition, and there's a lot that they have brought in within their doctrines and with their practices within what they have. And so these are simply some examples that you have in that regard. Also, you have in Jeremiah 6 and verse 16, where Jeremiah said, "Stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your soul." You remember what the Lord said in Matthew when he said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and heavy laden, I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls." Jeremiah identifies the old paths. It is not just simply because they're old. It's a matter that they have been tested. They have been tried. They have been proved and proven to be the way to go. And he said, "You will have rest unto your soul." And that is the path of righteousness. Righteousness is that of right wiseness. You could be righteous, a path of the righteous, which is righteousness, which is the right way.
and in regard to it is in accordance with that of the will of God. So there's an example. Seek the old path. Judaism. Judaism is considered by religious Jews to be the expression of the covenant that God established with the Israelites. That's what they how they're identified in regards to their service to the Lord. And then you have Christianity, that's also in Acts chapter 9 and verse 2, where it talks about the way. Okay. The Lord said, I am the way. And so that deals with the matter of all of these principles, that there's a lot of things out there that is going to try to draw in your devotion and your service. And so you're going to have them. You're going to have to deal with them. And you need to make sure that you understand that you might seek that old path, as Jeremiah talks about, because this has been proven, it's been tried, it's been tested, and it's been shown to be the way that God, that the Creator, has established for us to know. All right, so we're involved, the lost. So what does it mean? He came to seek and to save that which is lost. So we're dealing with the matter of restoring a lost relationship. That's what the Lord has come to do. He's come to help us to restore that relationship. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 22 through 24, you recall that Adam and Eve, that after their transgression of the laws of God, they were driven out, or God would drive them out. They had already blamed each other. You know, the Lord said, what have you done? And Adam said, well, it's the woman you gave me. And the woman says, well, it's the serpent. And so always from the beginning, it's been a matter of blaming somebody else for the difficulty. You recall our study that we have of the prophets right now, that when Elijah comes to Ahab, and Ahab refers to him as a troubler, it's your fault. Okay? Elijah says, no, it is your fault. This is what you have done. And so it's common for man to try to put off that guilt to somebody else rather than accepting their situation. But in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 22, and Jehovah God said, behold, the man is become as one of us to know good and evil. And now, lest he put forth his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever, therefore Jehovah God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. And so he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden the cherubim and the flame of a sword, which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. So there was the principle in regards to that, in reference to the matter of loss, restoring the loss, and man has ever since been trying to get back to that state. To get back to the garden, if you will, where that relationship with God has been. And so many religions that they're involved in trying to appease the God is what they're involved in, of doing that which they believe will appease their gods. We find that in Isaiah chapter 59, verse 1 and 2 actually, but in verse 2 we are brought to the matter. Now this deals with what we know is what God has revealed to us. We wouldn't know this had God not revealed it. And so here is a mechanism through which God said, I want you to know what it is that put you in the condition that you're in, what has severed this relationship that we now have the opportunity to have restored. In verse 1 he said, Jehovah's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, neither his ear heavy that it cannot hear, but your iniquities have separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you so that he will not hear. So what separated us from God that has destroyed that relationship, and it is that of which we know as sin. Sin is lawlessness. Sin is a transgression of the law. And in reference to this, it deals with man's relationship to God. Well, we find in Romans chapter 3 and verse 23 that all have come short of the glory of God. Sin has come short of the glory of God. In Romans chapter 5 and verse 12, of wherefore that all have sinned. Now here's why man is in need of salvation. Not just some of us, but all of us are in need of what God provides. For he said, therefore, as through one man, sin entered into the world. It affected the rest of the world.
those that would come from their seed. And death through sin. That's this separation of the relationship that we have with God. Sin or death comes to all men. Right? That's a byproduct of being sent forth from the garden. But the sin that it against God is one that separates us from God. And so death passed unto all men, for that all sinned. And so that puts us in this situation of where this lost, we're lost because of this broken separation that, or this broken event that came about that separates us from God. In Romans chapter 2, verse 12 through 16, we find that in reference to sin, sometimes individuals will make the statement, they say, well, if you don't obey the gospel, you're going to be lost. The fact is, we're already lost. The gospel is the good news. The bad news is, we're lost, Romans 5, verse 12. The good news is that we don't have to stay lost. The good news is one that identifies that we have a mechanism through which we can be that have that relationship destroyed. All right, so you don't have to know about the law of Moses. You don't have to know about the gospel. You don't have to know about any of these aspects because sin will be committed whether it is through a written word or by nature, what God has placed within us, within every individual. Romans chapter 2, verse 12. For he said, for as many as have sinned without the law, that's the law of Moses, without that access, those that have sinned without the law shall also perish without the law. And as many as have sinned under the law, I'm sorry, that's the one, without the law is without the law of Moses. Sin under the law are for those that have sinned being under the law of Moses. They both shall be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. Now, here's this matter. What about the Gentiles that didn't have the law? For when Gentiles that have not the law do by nature the things of the law, these, not having the law, are law unto themselves, in that they show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness therewith, and their thoughts one with another, accusing or else excusing them. So I either determine it's right or it's wrong. I do that. But know what he said. In the day when God shall judge the secrets of men according to my gospel by Jesus Christ. Man gets to a position within his life. He's at the age of accountability, he or she, at the age of accountability. They have made a conscious decision to do what they know they ought not to do. Made a conscious decision. God will hold us accountable for that. Because he has placed within us an innate law that is inborn, that comes with every creature that has the mental capacity to do so, with those innate laws in determining what's right or wrong, and the time will come when we will choose the wrong over the right, even though we know. I know I ought not to do this, but, you know, we've been dealing with, as I mentioned a while ago, about the prophets. That when the prophet came and had prepared himself, he was going to go talk to Ahab, and he goes to his neighbor and he says, strike me. In the name of the Lord, in the command of the Lord, strike me. He says, I will not strike you. Prophet says, then you'll die. He was eaten by a lion. So he comes to the next one and he says, strike me by the command of the Lord. That dude struck him. Right? And so you find that it's not within the volume or how bad it is. I'm not a murderer. Not all of what you perceive to be the most hideous crimes, heinous crimes that you could probably come up with, it's identified whether or not we're going to serve the Lord. Whether we're going to do it. The manna, when they sent the manna from heaven, they said, you have 5 days to collect it. You collect every day for 5 days, just enough for the day. So they'd go out and they'd collect it and then they'd get a bunch more. It might not be here. And it molded and was ruined. Right. On the sixth day, you get enough for both days. Right. For the sixth and the seventh day. So they went out, and all they gathered was what they gathered in the days before. So comes the sixth day, they go, or seventh day, they go out there. There's no manna. And the Lord said, how long will this people try me? Do what I've instructed you to do. It's for your good always. And that principle goes back to what when Satan tempted the Lord and said that if you are the Son of God, if you are, if that's what you claim, if you are, turn this stone into bread. And Jesus said, man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that cometh proceedeth out of the mouth of God. Goes back to this manna thing. God said, I'll take care of it. But you put your confidence and your trust in me. And we always have a tendency to try the Lord. I know what he says, but what if he doesn't? And that's what Jeroboam did. Jeroboam, God gave Jeroboam the same promise he gave to David, that his kingdom would exist from father to son, father to son, father to son throughout his generation. But Jeroboam says, well, if they go to Jerusalem to worship, they're going to return to David. So what am I going to do? So he put idols in Bethel and Dan. And the people, the children of Israel, the northern kingdom, served those idols throughout the rest of their existence. He should have put his trust in God, but he did not. So whether you sin with or without the law, the written law, we find that we still sin. Romans chapter 1 and verse 18, we find that the wrath of God has been revealed from heaven, see, against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. In the writing of the Ephesian letter, in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 6, here's what the Lord tells us in regards to the matter of disobedience. For he said in Ephesians chapter 5 verse 6, when he said, let no man deceive you with empty words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience. That matter of being deceived by man. He said in verse 3, fornication and all uncleanness and covetousness, let it not even be named among you as becometh saints, nor filthiness, nor foolish talking, or jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know of a surety, that no fornicator, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. And then he said, let no man deceive you with empty words. Don't be overtaken by what man says is right. Here, do this, or do this, or don't do this. Don't allow them to deceive you in regards to that. For because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. For ye were once darkness, but are now light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is well-pleasing unto the Lord. And have no fellowship. That's kind of a joining in their pursuits. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather even reprove them or identify them. Convict those that are doing so of the error that they're involved in. For the things which are done by them in secret, it is a shame even to speak of. And so the restoring, we're lost because we have sinned, and we have a restoring of this relationship through Christ, that he came to seek and to save that which is lost. We know from Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, that it is appointed unto man once to die, and after this cometh judgment. It's a fact. We know the first part is a fact. Man's been appointed to die, and we see it all the time. And the scriptures tell us that following that, there will be a time of judgment. There will be also a resurrection from the dead. It's not a matter of just being like Rover and dead all over. It's a matter that there is going to be a resurrection that is not over when we expire from this life. And we find of where the Apostle Paul had identified in Acts chapter 24 and verse 15 when he said, having hope toward God, which these also themselves look for, talking about those that are trying the Apostle Paul and trying to get him killed. Okay? that he having hope toward God, which these also themselves look for, that there shall be a resurrection both of the just and unjust. Some doctrines teach that with the resurrection, the just are going to be raised and the unjust are not. So that'll make that distinction. So if you die and you're not just, then you just die. That's all it is. Of course, Paul identified, if there is no resurrection, then let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. But there is the resurrection, of which we know about, because the Lord revealed it to us. And this old path, this standard, has been proven and tried to be correct and right and just. In the writing of the 1 Corinthians letter, 1 Corinthians chapter 5, I changed that on my notes, I just didn't hear. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, that identifies of this matter, that for we must all be made manifest before the judgment seat of Christ. Now this here, you go to a court of law. And in this court of law, you go before the judge. Now you're not the one that determines to do this. I think I'll just go to the judge. No, you have been directed to do that. To go before the judge. And you come before the judge, the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether it be good or bad, or good or evil. And so that's a matter of which we need to consider in regard to that. And the point that we have in Romans chapter 1 and verse 4, that Christ has been proven to be the Son of God by the resurrection. And in Acts chapter 17 and verse 31, that he has also been appointed judge by the Father, when he said, inasmuch as he hath appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he hath ordained, whereof he hath given assurance unto all men, in that he hath raised him from the dead. He's going to be the judge that is going to do that. In John chapter 12 and verse 48 and through 50, we find that we will be judged by the words that he spoke. This is kind of like an open book test, if you will. You've got the answers. You know what he taught. That's what's going to judge us in that day. Verse 48, for when he said, he that rejecteth me, Jesus, he that rejecteth me and receiveth not my saying, has one that judgeth him. The word that I spake, the same shall judge him in the last day. What did he say? It's an open book. It behoove us to know what he said, because that's what's going to judge us in that day, when he, as being appointed by God, will be the judge of the world. And we find that in 2 Thessalonians 1, 8 through 9, still dealing with this issue of from what do we need to be saved, the Apostle Paul identified this judgment that is going to come upon the disobedient when he said in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 8, rendering vengeance to them that know not God and to them that obey not the gospel of our Lord Jesus, who shall suffer punishment, even eternal destruction. That's driven out. That's what happened to Adam and Eve. They were driven out. Eternal destruction from the face or the presence or the goodwill of the Lord and from the glory of his might. Now here, it's interesting. Verse 10 said, when he shall come to be glorified in his saints and to be marveled at in all them that believe, because our testimony unto you was believed in that day. Marveled at. That marvelous event of which we cannot even fathom of what it's going to be. That day is going to come. Those that obey not the gospel and those that as he had identified in verse 8, that do not obey the gospel and those that know not God. Okay? Separate, driven out from the faith, from the goodwill of the Lord. That's what we need to be saved from, because that will just end in eternal destruction. Restoring a relationship found. We already destroyed it, but here's a matter that we have a relationship found. Peter talked about in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 25, when we were as sheep gone astray, but have returned to the bishop of our soul.
Romans chapter 5, 6 through 11, that be saved from the wrath of God. That is what the Lord's going to do. He's going to save us because in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 18, we find this principle of being, this matter of being reconciled unto God. So here's what he's done. From what do we need to be saved? We need to be saved from the severed relationship that we had with our Creator. But all things are of God who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave unto us the ministry of reconciliation, to wit, that God was in Christ reconciling the world unto himself, not reckoning unto them their trespasses, and having committed unto us the word of reconciliation. That's the gospel. Paul said in Romans chapter 1, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God unto salvation. What do we need saved from? It's this severed relationship. Verse 20. Paul said, we, talking about the apostles, are ambassadors therefore on behalf of Christ, as though God were entreated by us, we beseech you on behalf of Christ, be ye reconciled to God. Jesus came to seek and to save that which is lost, but he does not force it upon any. And he encouraged them, be ye reconciled to God. Him that knew no sin, he made to be sin, or a sin offering, on our behalf, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. And working together with him, we entreat also that ye receive not the grace of God in vain. For he saith, at an acceptable time I hearkened unto thee, and in the day of salvation did I succor thee. Behold, now is the acceptable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. Give no occasion of stumbling in anything, that our ministration be not blamed. That's what we have. What do we need saved from? We have this matter of grace and faith. And faith is the foundation of faith in what God. Faith comes of hearing, and hearing by the word of God. And if we believe what God said, and we hope to be reconciled or desire to be, Jesus says, come unto me, all you that labor and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your soul. Do we want it? Is that what we want? To have that relationship restored, that we can benefit from that which the Son of Man came to do, and that is to seek and to save that which is lost.